Usually, when life feels like it's dragging you underwater, you naturally look around for something external to grab onto, right?
Right, yeah, like a life jacket or something.
Exactly. A life jacket, a safety net. You want this tangible object to pull you out of the turbulent waters, especially when you're dealing with overwhelming emotions or those really destructive old patterns. We are just completely conditioned to look outside of ourselves for rescue when things get rough.
Which, I mean, makes perfect sense from a survival standpoint.
Oh, totally.
Yeah, if you are physically drowning, you obviously want a physical life raft. But the mechanics of the human mind require a completely different kind of tool. And the crazy thing is, the most profound anchor you could ever ask for to navigate all that emotional turbulence, it is already installed in your biology.
Right, it's just built in.
Exactly. You don't have to buy it. You don't have to pack it in a bag. And you've been using it continuously since the literal second you were born.
Okay, so to set the stage for you listening, we are pulling our insights today entirely from the Raft to Freedom program. And to give you a bit of a map for our deep dive today, this specific practice we're talking about fits into a broader architecture called the RAFT framework.
Right. And that ACE is pronounced simply as the word raft.
Yeah, Raft. And the framework is an acronym. It outlines this very deliberate sequence: recognize, abandon, feel, train.
But today we're focusing exclusively on that crucial first step.
Right, recognize.
Yeah, recognize. We're exploring the practice of mindfulness of the body, specifically through breathing. And we're going to get into why recognizing that breath is basically the ultimate biological paradox.
The paradox aspect is wildly fascinating to me because think about your bodily functions for a second, like digestion or heart rate, cellular repair. Those are entirely involuntary.
Right, they just happen.
Yeah, you could just sit there and consciously decide to speed up your digestion.
I mean, that would be convenient, but no.
Exactly. And then you have voluntary functions, like walking across the room or speaking a sentence, picking up a coffee cup. But the breath, it sits perfectly at the threshold between those two worlds.
It really does bridge that gap between the conscious and the unconscious mind. Like breathing is an automatic bodily function. It's running in the background, whether you pay attention to it or not.
Right.
Yet, the instant you choose to, you can take conscious control of it. You can slow it down, or you can hold it or deepen it. And because it occupies that super unique middle ground, it acts as a direct access point to your nervous system.
Which is so cool. And, you know, this isn't some new biohacking discovery we just came up with. The Raft program points back to deeply ancient wisdom on this exact mechanism.
Yeah, it goes way, way back.
The basic construction goes all the way back to Gautama, the Buddha, in his talk on the four anchors of mindfulness.
Right. And the setup he described thousands of years ago is deceptively simple.
Oh yeah, it sounds so easy on paper.
Exactly. The instruction suggests going to a forest or to the root of a tree or an empty pit. You sit down, you fold your legs crosswise, set your body upright, and establish mindfulness right in front of you. And then you just observe the breath.
Just watch it.
Yeah. Ever mindful you breathe in, ever mindful you breathe out. That's it.
Okay, let's unpack this a bit. Because modern life doesn't exactly offer an abundance of empty forest huts for most of us.
True. Not a lot of empty huts around these days.
Right, but the principle is about stepping away from the noise. You set a dignified posture and tune in to this ever-present rhythm. It's like a steady rope. If your mind is caught in these turbulent currents of reactivity, the breath is this steady rope you can grab onto. It's a reliable home base.
That's a great analogy. It really is a home base.
But here is where people, and definitely myself included, usually hit a wall. When you sit down and try to observe the breath, the immediate instinct is to try and control it.
Oh, 100%.
You sit there and you think, okay, I'm meditating now, so I need to take these long, deep, zen-like breaths.
Yeah, that is definitely the most common hurdle. But the goal of this specific practice within the RAF program is observation, not manipulation.
So you don't force it.
No, not at all. Unless you are engaging in, like, a structured breathing exercise aimed at a specific physiological result, the objective here is purely to notice the natural quality of the breath.
Okay, so just seeing what it's already doing.
Exactly. If the breath is long, you simply understand, oh, I am breathing in a long breath. If it's short or shallow, you just register, I am breathing in a short breath.
You're just feeling the physical sensations.
Yeah,
Like
exactly.
the cool air hitting the tip of your nostrils on the inhale and the slightly warmer air on the exhale. Or maybe you notice the rising and falling of your chest or your tummy. It's just this sustained, gentle attention on the physical reality of the present moment.
And paying attention to those physical sensations leads to a really profound experiential insight. This is actually a key aspect of Gotama's first realization.
Which is impermanence, right?
Yes, impermanence. When you sit and truly observe your breath, you realize that no two breaths are identical. The whole flow is in a state of constant change. A breath arises, it reaches a peak, it passes away, and then a new one immediately takes its place.
Okay, wait. Let me push back on this for a second on behalf of you listening.
Sure, go for it.
If I am feeling incredibly stressed out, or I'm facing a massive urge to fall back into a really destructive old pattern, passively, watching my breath change feels a bit like sitting in a burning house and just watching the wallpaper peel.
That's a very fair point.
Like, how does passive observation actually put the fire out?
Well, because you aren't just observing the breath. You are training your mind to fundamentally change how it relates to discomfort.
How so?
By watching the constantly changing flow of the breath, you start to deeply internalize the reality that everything changes. You begin to see that difficult emotions or intense anger or really overwhelming cravings, they are also governed by that exact same law of impermanence.
So the emotion feels like it's going to last forever in the moment, but it's actually just a wave.
Precisely. It's just a wave. When you practice observing the breath without interfering, you are building the mental muscle required to observe your own thoughts and emotions in the exact same way.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. So you notice a craving arising, and instead of instantly acting on it, you just watch it peak and eventually pass. You stop identifying with the emotion as an absolute truth about who you are.
Oh, wow. That is a massive shift in perspective. It's like decoupling your identity from the emotion.
It really is.
Because normally when we get triggered, our language reflects this total fusion with the feeling.
Yeah.
We say things like, I am angry or I am stressed.
Right. You become the emotion.
Yeah, exactly. But the practice shifts that to, I am experiencing a temporary feeling of anger. You aren't the burning house, you know. You are just the space where a temporary fire is happening.
And creating that space is exactly how we break our autopilot. This is where the RAFT program gets into the real heavy lifting regarding the pull of compulsive behaviors. Because when we fall overboard into old patterns, it is rarely a slow, deliberate, conscious choice.
No, it happens in a flash.
Exactly. It is a rapid-fire, automatic reaction to discomfort. We feel a trigger, the nervous system flares up, and we instantly reach for some habitual coping mechanism to numb it.
It happens so much faster than conscious thought.
Yeah.
You feel the stress, and before you even realize what you're doing, you're halfway through a pint of ice cream, or you're lashing out at your partner, or you're just falling back into whatever that old pattern is for you.
Which brings us to the core utility of mindfulness of breathing. What's fascinating here is that it creates a critical gap.
A gap.
Yeah, it inserts a pause between the trigger you feel and the reaction your body wants to automatically execute.
Okay, so the breath is essentially a circuit breaker.
A circuit breaker is a perfect way to conceptualize it. By habitually returning your attention to your breath, you literally interrupt the automatic electrical pathway between the stimulus and the response.
Right.
You feel the urge, but instead of blindly reacting, your trained mind redirects attention to the physical sensation of breathing.
And that tiny redirection starves the automatic reaction of the immediate momentum it needs.
Yeah.
It buys you a few seconds to actually choose a more helpful response.
Exactly. It breaks that unconscious autopilot.
But, okay, let's talk about what actually happens when you try to use that circuit breaker. Because in reality, you sit down, you focus on your breath, and about 12 seconds later, you are obsessing over an embarrassing thing you said at a party in 2019.
Oh, absolutely.
The mind wanders. It is guaranteed to wander.
It is. The wandering isn't a glitch. It's a fundamental feature of the human brain. But how you handle that wandering is where the RAFT program introduces a really vital concept.
Self-compassion.
Yes. But this isn't self-compassion as some abstract, fuzzy feeling. The program frames it as inward kindness in action.
I love that phrase. And I love how the text reframes this whole dynamic. When you realize your mind has wandered off and you've spent the last 3 minutes planning your grocery list instead of observing your breath, simply bringing your attention back to the breath is the practice.
That is the practice.
Right. Waking up to the fact that you were distracted and gently returning to the anchor is the entire point. It is not a failure of the practice.
Exactly. Think about the alternative. What happens when you judge yourself for getting distracted?
You feel terrible.
Right. You feel frustration. You feel shame. the internal dialogue just becomes, oh, I can't even focus on my own breathing for a minute. I'm completely broken.
And shame is the exact fuel that drives those compulsive behaviors in the first place. Mm. If you turn your mindfulness practice into just another arena to beat yourself up, you are literally generating the emotional turbulence that causes you to fall overboard.
Spot on. So responding to a wandering mind with gentle understanding, just patiently guiding the attention back to the breath without that harsh internal monologue, it is an active intervention against shame.
You're building a safe space internally.
Exactly. You are cultivating a calmer, more forgiving inner environment. And that inner safety is absolutely necessary if you are ever going to be able to sit with life's inherent discomfort rather than habitually fleeing from it.
This all sounds beautifully philosophical, but the RAV program highlights how heavily backed this is by modern clinical psychology and neuroscience, right? Like, we're talking about physically changing your body's chemistry.
We really are. When you engage in slow, deliberate observation of the breath, you are directly manipulating your autonomic nervous system. You are sending a signal down the vagus nerve.
Oh, the vagus nerve.
Yeah, which acts as the biological brake pedal for your body.
And the vagus nerve connects the brain to almost all the major organs, doesn't it?
It does, and it oversees the parasympathetic nervous system. So your rest and digest mode. When you are caught in a trigger or an urge, your sympathetic nervous system is in overdrive. That's the fight or flight state.
Right, so adrenaline is pumping, cortisol levels spike, your heart rate accelerates.
Yes, total alarm mode. But by focusing on breathing steadily, especially if you emphasize a slightly longer exhale, the vagus nerve releases a neurotransmitter called acetylcholine, which physically lowers your heart rate.
So you are literally transmitting a biological message to your own brain that says, hey, we are not being chased by a tiger right now. We are safe.
You're completely overriding the panic alarm. And the brain imaging research on this is just staggering.
Oh, I bet.
Regular engagement with this practice actually physically alters brain structure. It strengthens the prefrontal cortex, which is the area responsible for high-level executive function, emotional regulation, and conscious decision-making.
While simultaneously dialing down the areas that cause all the chaos.
Exactly. It reduces reactivity in the amygdala, which is the brain's threat detection center. Furthermore, focusing on the sensory input of the breath pulls energy away from the default mode network.
Okay, the default mode network is fascinating to me. That's basically the brain's rumination station, right?
Yes, that's exactly what it is.
Right. When you aren't focused on a specific task, this network lights up, and it's responsible for basically all of our background anxiety, like dwelling on past regrets or projecting catastrophic future scenarios, obsessing over our own ego and how others perceive us.
Right, and the default mode network relies entirely on abstract conceptual thinking.
Oh, I see.
So by forcing your attention onto direct physical sensory input, like the actual feeling of air moving through your nose, you are effectively starving that rumination network of the electrical energy it needs to run.
Wow.
You literally can't deeply obsess over the future if 100% of your cognitive bandwidth is focused on the physical sensation of right now.
Which makes total sense. And that's why this mechanism, using the breath to force the brain out of abstract rumination and into present moment physical reality, is the foundation of so many modern evidence-based therapies, you know, like MBSR, ACT, DBT, all those therapies designed to treat severe anxiety and deep-rooted behavioral patterns.
Yeah, it increases interoception, which is your ability to perceive physical sensations inside your body. Because many people who struggle with old destructive patterns are entirely disconnected from their bodies.
They don't even know what they're feeling.
Right. They don't realize they're anxious until they're already lashing out. Breath observation reestablishes that internal mapping so you can catch the physiological buildup of an urge before it completely overwhelms you.
It's just so interesting how this very medical neurological explanation sounds almost identical to ancient philosophy. Like, it aligns perfectly with phenomenology, doesn't it?
It really does. Phenomenology emphasizes the value of direct lived experience over intellectualizing or conceptualizing everything.
Right.
We cause ourselves immense suffering by constantly thinking about our feelings. We weave these complex narratives around why we are sad or why we are angry.
Always trying to solve the feeling.
Exactly. But mindfulness of breathing strips that narrative away. You aren't analyzing why you have an urge. You are just directly experiencing the physical sensation of it until it dissipates.
It also feels incredibly stoic to me, because the ultimate stoic principle is focusing entirely on what is within your control and accepting what isn't. You can't control the fact that a difficult emotion has suddenly arisen in your mind.
Right, it's already there.
Yeah, it's there. But you can absolutely control where you place your attention in the next 3 seconds.
It's an exercise in profound self-mastery. But even more simply, it is a practice of being rather than constantly doing.
Yes.
So much of the restlessness that drives our compulsive behaviors stems from this relentless need to constantly be doing something, like fixing a problem, avoiding a feeling, achieving a goal. Sitting with the breath counters all that frantic momentum. It reconnects you with the fundamental baseline rhythm of life itself.
So practically speaking, for someone listening right now, how do you actually build this circuit breaker into your daily life? Because a RAFT program offers some very grounded ways to start, and thankfully, none of them involve moving to a forest.
Thankfully. No, the absolute key here is starting small to build consistency. The program recommends utilizing a journal to track your progress and keeping the practice to just 3 to 5 minutes once or twice a day.
Just 3 minutes. I mean, literally everyone has 3 minutes.
Exactly. You just sit down, adopt a comfortable but alert position, and gently rest your attention on the breath, like at the nostrils, chest, or abdomen. And when the mind wanders, you just kindly bring it back.
And then you write about it.
Yeah. Afterward, you jot down a few notes about the experience. Was it difficult to focus today? Did you notice any specific physical tensions or emotions bubbling up?
And behind that dedicated sit-down time, the true power of this seems to come from weaving it into the margins of your day, right?
Mm-hmm.
The RAFT program suggests setting an intention to consciously check in with your breath during mundane moments. Like while you are waiting in line at the grocery store or sitting at red lights or just walking from your car to the office.
Those micro check-ins are really where the self-awareness is forged, because you'll suddenly realize, oh, wow, I'm just reading a standard work email, but my shoulders are all the way up by my ears and my breathing is incredibly shallow and jagged.
I do that all the time.
We all do. But making those connections in real time is what allows you to stabilize your raft before the storm fully hits.
It's about building a daily rhythm that gently but constantly tethers you back to reality. So to bring all of this together, mindfulness of the body through breathing is not merely some quick relaxation hack to use when you are stressed.
Not at all.
It is a foundational survival skill. It is how you cultivate the self-awareness necessary to actually observe your own mind. It is how you realize that your deepest cravings and darkest emotions are impermanent. And perhaps most importantly, it is the tool you use to interrupt the autopilot of old patterns by creating that vital gap between feeling an urge and reacting to it.
It gives you a reliable anchor in waters that are guaranteed to get turbulent.
Absolutely. Before we close out today, I want to make sure you know exactly where to find this incredible resource, because the RAFT to Freedom workbook is written by Dr. Catherine Jacob and Vince Cullen, and they are doing something genuinely remarkable. They are making the entire 66-chapter program freely available online.
It's an amazing resource.
It really is. You can access all of it, including this specific chapter on mindfulness of breathing at raft2freedom.org. That is raft, the number 2, freedom.org.
It is a truly remarkable body of work. And as we finish our deep dive today, I want to invite you to engage in a very brief self-reflection right now, wherever you happen to be listening from.
Yeah, try this out.
Ask yourself, when you notice a craving, an urge, or a difficult emotion arise today, can you find the gap between feeling it and reacting to it? Can you pause just for a moment and feel the physical sensation of your next breath?
There was a beautiful quote from Thich Nhat Hanh featured at the end of this chapter in the RAFT program that perfectly encapsulates everything we've explored today. He says, "Feelings come and go like clouds in a windy sky. Conscious breathing is my anchor."
I'd like to leave you with one final thought to mull over as you go about your day. Consider the profound irony that the most ordinary, mundane biological function, something you've been doing entirely unconsciously since the moment you were born, is actually the master key to unlocking your conscious freedom. What else in your daily automatic routine might be hiding that kind of transformative power?